What's up, podcast land? We're back again. We've never even left you. So how can we be back again? We've just been here. I don't know. It's my vacation. I'm off for the entire week this week. So I'm going to be doing nothing. Actually, I did a lot so far. And it's halfway over. And I'm starting to feel that, it's halfway over. We're down the slope now. You know, we just rode up the roller coaster. Now it's about to head down. And I'm not a fan of that. But who gives a fuck about me? This episode is brought to you by Silence in Solitude. Based out of Southern New Jersey, Silence in Solitude is a metalcore quintet that consists of Shane Roxas, Colby Hempel, Cody Mitchell, Alexander Coates, and Justin Pomper. The band formed in early 2015 and made their debut in September of the following year, 2016, having spent the previous year writing and recording. So what that lead up to? Well, their debut album Resurgence, which came out in December of 2016, and it debuted at number 20 on the iTunes Metal Charts. How fucking awesome is that? I'll answer that for you. Very fucking awesome. They have released music videos for their singles Suffering, Deceiver, and for the cover of Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. I'm on vacation. Fuck you, people. But if you don't want to take my word for how awesome this fucking album is, if you don't want to take the band's word on how awesome their album is, what about New Transcendence? They said that Resurgence is a must-listen for 2016, without a doubt, especially for fans of metal and its subgenres. If you're looking for something that is emotionally powerful, but not too whiny, aggressive, but not hate-filled, and will stand the test of time, this is the album you've been searching for. For more information, hit up www.silenceinsolitude.com. This episode is also brought to you by our boys in 6 to the 2 to the 7. So, they say that if you just imagine the Foo Fighters and Muse stuffed in an underground studio during the nuclear holocaust with nothing but Weezer and Radiohead albums to session, well, you don't have to imagine anymore. You just listen to 627. They deliver the attitude of an underdog and the punch of a champion. 627's chunky guitar riffs, charismatic vocals, and emotional solos are the most beautiful ass whooping your ears have ever taken. Goddamn right. For more information, hit up dub7records.com. That's D-U-B, the number 7records.com. And like them on Facebook, facebook.com/SIXTWOSEVEN, then the number 627. So 627, 627. So thank you for everyone that came out to the Golden Hearts Festival, which took place last Thursday and also yesterday. Apparently the turnout was great. Unfortunately, couldn't go myself. Had some prior engagements, but for everyone that did go, I heard a lot of great things, and thank you all for supporting the New York City and New Jersey scene. Yeah, that's all I had to say about that. Now, we are still promoting Nowhere Fest, which is happening from October 20th to the 22nd, and you have incredible bands, such as Body Snatcher, Cock Punch, Conveyor, Comeback Kid, Cold as Life, Jesus Peace, Unbroken Wings, Slapshot, Brick by Brick, Vane, Degrader, and so much more. All 3 days happening at the Chance Complex in Poughkeepsie, New York. Single-day tickets are $25 in advance, $30 the day of show, and a 3-day pass is $60. So you're essentially getting Friday for free. Can't beat that. Anyways, I think they're going to have some tattoo designers there. A lot of great stuff. I'm not too sure. They keep coming out with new things each week, which is pretty fucking cool. So, anyways, we're sponsoring it. Come on out. It's from Out of Nowhere Booking, and they are awesome. So, shout out to Nikki for putting this festival on, and we are happy to promote it on each and every each and every episode that we air until the 20th. So, anyways, let's get right into things. This one is a Daniel episode, and he speaks with Vincent Torres, the singer of the theatrical rock band from Delaware. Yeah, you heard me right. From fucking Delaware. There's a theatrical rock. I don't even say a band. They are a movement. They're called Awake at Last, and I think they are one of the very few local bands that actually charted on the Billboard 200. God damn. See, that's the power of local music right there. You can't get much better than that. So they're not even signed, and they have an album that charted on the Billboard Top 200. I mean, there's a lot of bands out there that have nothing but marketing and promotion in back of them trying to push an album, and sometimes it doesn't even chart. So big props to these guys. Dan goes into that, goes into a local scene, and a whole bunch of other great topics. So let's kick it off with our intro, then Daniel, and then goes right into Awake at Last. So yeah, here's our intro.
From out of the wasteland of generic podcasts and radio shows, one has emerged. It prides itself on having conversations with the most talented musicians from all over the world. If you like a boring question and answer interview, this isn't for you. If you want deep conversations about anything and everything, you've come to the right place. Your new favorite show starts now, and its name is Behind the Barricade.
What's up, Podcast Land? This is Daniel Tao for another episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast. On this episode, I speak with Vince from the theatrical hard rock band Awake at Last. We talk about the grind as a local musician and what sets them apart from the other local bands out there. We go over their huge successes, such as being featured on Alternative Press, Bloody Disgusting, them playing three shows on Warped Tour, which their 2017 date was on the Journey stage, and them even charting on the Billboard charts, which is crazy for a local band that's not even signed. Anyway, it was a great conversation. The connection was a little rough, but the content was amazing. Without further ado, I present to you Awake at Last.
Where are you calling from?
I am currently at my friend. I'm pretty good friends with this band called Alteris, and they're in town off of their tour right now, and they're doing like a little cookout. So I'm chilling at their cookout outside. Sick.
What
I just ate, so it was delicious.
What'd you have?
I had a burger and I had a hot dog, and his mom made like a really good fruit salad, so we had that, and then like homemade pickles, like cucumbers that were actually like pickled in vinegar and some other stuff.
Shit. I mean, what kind of cookout is it without burgers and hot dogs, you know?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. No vegan cookout with veggie burgers and kale salads.
I mean, I've done cookouts with veggie burgers. I don't necessarily mind.
Oh,
when
yeah,
I know. Vegan friends come over, I'm just like, all right, guys, here's your black bean burgers. I'll cook them separate from everything else. You're good.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are fine. It's actually kind of funny that Burger King now sells Morningstar Farm veggie burgers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's cropping up all over the place. So what, are they a local band too, or...?
They're from Youngstown, Ohio. I've been town visiting a girl of by that I've been pretty close with. Mm-hmm. So we swung by to see them because I was in town.
Mm-hmm. And you guys are from Delaware?
Yeah, from Delaware.
Nice. Not too far from Jersey.
Not too far. Is that where you're at?
Yeah. Neckong. It's kind of towards Pennsylvania.
I got you.
Yeah. So you guys tour
all Jersey.
I know, right? You ever been here before?
Oh, yeah. The what do they call it? The jug handles? Because you can never make left turns. You always have to take the little jug handle turns.
Dude, you want to know what's so
They're
funny?
They're the worst.
I know. You want to know what's so funny? I just took like a mini road trip to Florida. And that was the one The one thing I loved was like being able to just make a freaking U-turn on the highway.
Right?
Dude, it's like, yeah, New Jersey, it's like you got to go to the U-turn. You miss it, you got to go to the U-turn.
You're right. And then in Jersey, you can't pump your own gas.
Nah.
That sucks.
Yeah, you got, if there's a whole crap load of cars and you have one gas attendant helping everybody, you have to wait.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the same time, sometimes it sucks getting out and pumping your own gas, but still.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose it could go either way.
Yeah, I mean, then again, being able to just pull in if there's no car, you know, gas and go.
Truth.
All right, so you guys tour a lot, or
all the time?
Nice. Yeah, it's funny. A lot of the bands that we interview, they tour a lot. You know, for local bands not being signed, and it just amazes me. Like for me, being in local bands, everyone's got like a 9-to-5 job, and it's like I'd basically have to quit my job to go on a tour. But it's just crazy to see all these bands that are making it work. You know, going on tour and just doing it.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. I know some of the band members have a couple of, like, you know, more full-time-ish type jobs that they've been at for a while. For me, I always end up having to work, like, odd jobs and stuff, or I'll just hit up, like, temp agencies or something like that.
So,
or, like, bartending gigs. Bartending gigs are good because there's always high demand, so you can always get people to cover your shifts when you're gone for a week or two.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, what would you do? Like, go on Craigslist and see if someone's hiring for a couple of days or something?
Essentially, or right now, like this this recent break I had, I did. I was just helping this my neighbor who's a real estate chick. Mm-hmm. I just handed out a bunch of flyers for her, and she paid me, so that was cool. It's just easy to do.
Nice, man. So when you're not on tour and not doing odd jobs, what do you do outside of music?
I actually run a taco stand with my parents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And how's the money in that business?
It's pretty good. When we can get to the good festivals, like, we make pretty killer tacos, so it ends up working out pretty well.
So you guys drive you drive a truck around and you visit like games and like festivals and stuff in cities?
Yeah, pretty much. And usually we'll try to do like music fests or like, you know, sometimes we'll park outside of like there's a brewery in town that'll have us like once a week and we'll just like set up because they don't sell any food there, but they sell beer. So if people are drinking, mm-hmm. they eventually get hungry and then they want tacos. Yeah. And we're like, hey, brilliant. We make those.
Yeah, brilliant idea. So is that that's what your parents do for a living or?
Well, my dad also works for like a car dealership. So mm-hmm. he does that too. And then my mom's currently retired.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie Chef?
Yes, I love it.
Dude, I love that movie. That like
a great movie,
dude. It's freaking awesome. That like makes me want to freaking get in like a tour van and just go or start like a food truck like that.
Yeah, dude, that would be cool. I think that actually sparked up the idea for us to start doing this. We've only been doing it for about 2.5-3 years, so it's a newer thing, but it's getting there.
So what did you do? Kind of like search for a used van to buy and kind of get a paint job?
We bought a trailer. We bought a trailer. We kind of gutted it out and kind of turned it into a traveling taco stand thing. Mm-hmm.
Have your parents always loved to like cook and stuff, or?
I would say so. I would say. I mean, I think they dig it. It keeps mom busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess
she's kind of bored now that she's not working anymore. So,
dude, I it's so funny for me. Like, obviously, I'm not 60 or you know retired, but it's just so funny when I see that like people that are retired having to get part-time jobs or do stuff to stay busy. Like when I'm on vacation from work, if it's like a staycation, dude, I'm always busy. I always find stuff to do.
Yeah, it kind of translates to me like a touring band too. Like when I'm home, I have to be doing something or I feel like very stagnant and kind of like uncomfortable. Man. As much as I love like the comforts of home or like having a TV or Netflix or a bed, I'm just kind of like, no, there's stuff that needs to be done, so I'm always trying to, like, find the next thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I get on the occasional binge on Netflix or HBO Go or something like that, but most of the time it's, like, building electronic drums or recording music or doing stuff with, like, Behind the Barricade, you know?
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. I wish I kind of had more access to do that or the talent for it. I have a couple of, like, little programs that I play with and try to compose on, but I'm not particularly good at it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
whenever I bring songs to the table, it's usually just like some acoustic chords and like a hook, and then we just build it from there with the band, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know if it's something like due to like your childhood, if you're like you grow up, but for something like for me with like technology and computers, I mean, of course, I'm not like a super nerd or whatever, and I don't know everything, but I if I want to learn how to like record on the computer, or if I want to learn how to use Excel, I can just teach myself. It's just like second nature almost.
Right. That's awesome. That's a good talent to have, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish it would translate more to money right now, but we'll see what happens in the future.
All things worth obtaining come in time, my friend.
Exactly.
A lot of the people I talk to, like up-and-coming bands, you know, because I've been trying to get into some consulting work and helping bands, like, you know, who are, like, just starting out get to, like, middle-level bands or at least touring-level bands. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to do a lot of work with that. And one of the main things that I see as an obstacle is that a lot of these kiddos still think that there's, like, the rock and roll pipe dream that you're just going to play a bar one day and get discovered by some huge record label and you're just going to get famous. And, like, that is just not the game anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, everything takes time and everything needs to be invested. So I'm really willing to put forth the time and effort it takes to get where you want to be, you know? Mm-hmm. I'll make it last. We were a band for 6 years before we even, like, before we were able to put the Life Death Rebirth album out, and it actually, like, you know, sell some copies and get on the billboards and stuff like that. It took time, you know. Mm-hmm. It took like 6 years of like paying our dues and like all the overhead costs and stuff like that, and touring and building the fan base. Like, it's not an overnight thing, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Although with some of the YouTube people, I guess they get, if you can get a one good viral video, you can. It's a decent foundation to launch off of, but mm-hmm. some of them, I feel like, you know, you got to be careful with that too, because if you're not used to the grind, or if you're not used to like the build up to it, I feel like that's why some bands or some musicians will kind of fizzle out, because they're not actually like aware of how like grueling and you know, hard the road can be on you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that you say that, because I don't know, like certain bands that I see out there, it's just like, you can tell, like, they love music, they play it a lot, but when it actually comes down to like getting that show or playing that show where you could, I don't know, be in front of record labels, it almost seems like they're scared for what would come. Like, oh, well, if I did get signed, I'd have to quit my job, I'd have to do this, I'd have to do that. I almost feel like a lot of local bands are kind of scared in that way, you know? They have that dream, have the talent, but they know in the back of their minds, like, it's not going to be easy. It's not just going to be like, all right, here's $1 million because you just got signed. Boom, you made it. Like,
exactly. I think a lot of people, like, when you think about it, like, if you think about the fear of failure, which is, you know, the more common of the fears, there's another side to that coin that is the fear of success. You know, like, I wouldn't even be able to sit here and say that, like, when things started happening, when we got, like, the chance to play Warped Tour or whatever, that I wasn't a little nervous to do so. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, oh man, like, it's one thing to like have a distant dream. It's another thing when that dream like knocks on your front door and it's like, yo, you ready to get on this roller coaster? So it's like, oh man, like, here we go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's like the biggest problem, not even just with bands, but with people in life, that like they're too afraid. And like, even though you might not be making a lot of money and things are tough and it's hard to make ends meet, people are just too, they're comfortable in that lifestyle and they're afraid to take chances. Like, when you look at all the people that are rich or like that are billionaires, I mean, not all of them, of course, people have, you know, trust funds and all that shit, but like the Steve Jobs or like Tesla, the guy from Tesla, Elon Musk,
right?
Like, dude, they pretty much like gave up a whole bunch of shit like just to be where they are, and they got there for a reason, for putting in work and giving up like a social life, or throwing it all away for like a chance to become rich. Or, I mean, dude, the Tesla company almost went broke like a bunch of times.
Right. Well, with no risk comes no reward either, man. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, you always have to be willing to, you know, you have to put yourself in uncomfortable situations in order to overcome those obstacles. So mm-hmm. I think that plays a big role in success anyway. And if you ever want any sort of success you can be proud of, or that you can like reflect back on, you know, you always, you know, I think it's always going to be more valuable if you know you earned it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, you know, I guess that's what separates the pack with people. If everyone took chances, you know, I guess we'd all be in a perfect place. But, I mean, at the same time, too, like you said before, I mean, you could play a show and you could get lucky. There could be a record label. But, I mean, for what we do, like, behind the barricade, like interviewing people and checking out all these local bands, I can't tell you how many bands, and like, it was like even eye opening for me, like how many people have Facebook page that is like so-and-so music, or how many local bands I'm like, their music is great, why aren't they signed? I mean, dude, a lot of times it's connections, or I mean, a big thing is connections, but like you said, it's the grind. It's the bands that do push 110% that would get over the edge, because again, there's so many other bands out there trying to do the same thing. It's difficult. It's not as easy as just walking into a bar and playing that show and getting signed.
You're right, man. With the digital age of music and stuff right now, it's become a lot more of a like last band standing kind of vibe. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's not whether or not you have the talent to do something or the dream to do something. It's whether or not you have the constitution to do what is necessary in order to like overcome the roadblocks that, you know, can stop certain bands in their tracks. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, I've seen it happen, you know. Yeah. One of the saddest parts about being a band for as long as we have is like seeing some of the bands we toured with earlier on in our career, like fizzling out because they just can't do it anymore. You know what I mean? Like watching them finally get to that point where they're like, oh, we just can't do this anymore. You know, and like some of them have their reasoning. Some of them have bigger opportunities or a good job comes up or, you know, sometimes love becomes a factor, you know, someone will fall in love. And, you know, if that becomes more important to you, that is what it is. But I think that's why it's become such a last band standing thing. Cause you have to sort of like put music above everything. You know, you have to love it more than, you know, love, or, you know, more than food or more than money. You know, you have to live it.
I mean, dude, the digital age nowadays, it's amazing. You can get your music out there so much easier. You can record your music so much easier and better quality. You don't need to pay.
Absolutely.
You don't need to get a record label. But at the same time, it's so easy that so many more people are doing it. I mean, it's not easy, but it's so much more easier than back then that so many more people are doing it. And you have such a convoluted and such a dense population of musicians that,
right,
like you said, you got to put in the grind.
Exactly.
So what do you – now, you guys are definitely very different from a lot of the – you guys are unsigned, right?
We are unsigned.
You're unsigned. So, yeah, you're very different from a lot of the local bands. I'm going to get into this a little bit later, but what would you say
–
no, that's all right. What would you say separates you from most of the local bands?
I would say I don't know. That's a hard question to ask. I mean, aside from our music type being a little out there, you know, it's – I would say one of the things that really separates us is the fact that, like, we haven't really – I guess it's because we've sort of built everything from the ground up. You know, sometimes that separates us a bit. You know, sometimes we'll meet bands that, you know, did know some people that were able to give them a little bit of a boost, you know what I mean? And, but because we never had that, I think it shows in our, like, professionalism and our humility that, like, that we've like, you know, everything we've done to get to where we are was like hard fought. And I think that raises people's eyebrows when it comes to us, because, you know, like, for instance, we were on Warped Tour and we were really friendly with the sound guys, you know, and like you'd think that every band would be friendly with the sound guys. But at the end of the night when we were all hanging out, the sound guy came up to us and was just like, you know, there are big bands on this tour, you know, and he didn't drop any names or anything, but like, you know, bands that are on these big Warped Tour shows that are like playing these huge things and have these huge fan bases. And the sound guy's like, yeah, man, you'd be surprised how like none of these bands have even said a word to us the entire time they've been here. You know what I mean? It's like, so I guess what keeps us kind of different is that we've done sort of everything ourselves, and we kind of like, we have a little bit more of a business mindset, I think. And I think that helps with, like, you know, giving us a slightly more like professional edge to things, because, you know, we don't ever let anything get to our head, but we're always, you know, we're always willing to like try to elevate and inspire people. And I think another thing that separates us is that, like, I mean, there's a lot of bands that are popping up right now that are putting out more positive messages, but, you know, for a while there, you know, it seemed like a lot of like bands and a lot of different artists were putting out negative and, you know, negative energies, negative messages. So it's all like, you know, it went from this, like, you know, kind of rebel, you know, kind of like negative vibes, and I think that we bring a more like positive element to the table. So I take pride in that, because we're all, you know, we're all into, like, you know, the law of attraction and, like, you know, the law of reaping and sowing, and we try to like spread positivity, and, like, you know, we try to be, you know, a sort of light in kind of a dark world. You know, we're always kind of trying to elevate and inspire people that, like, hey, if you're willing to put forth the time and you're willing to grind through what we've grinded through and spend the kind of money we've had to spend on this, it can eventually get to a point where you move into those profit margins, and then you have, you know, real goals to set. And then when you accomplish those goals, you have real things to celebrate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And the funny thing too is, like, going back to like the sound men, you wouldn't believe it how appreciative these security guards and like the sound people are when you actually help them. It's like you get like the biggest thank yous, and they're like so happy. Like, I remember at the my one band, we opened for Soil Work and Fear Factory, and the tour manager, I like started helping like the local bands like bring in their stuff and take it out, and he was like so freaking appreciative of me helping him. And even in a recent show my friend's band was at, I was helping them bring their stuff out, and the security guard was so appreciative. Like, again, you don't know, like, these people are at these venues all the time. You don't know what bands that come there on a regular basis that they know, or people in the industry that they know. So, like, for karma, I mean, every step you take to help someone else, it could come back to you twofold. So
absolutely, 100%.
So let's go back to Warped Tour. So you guys played on Warped Tour in 2013 and 14 on the Ernie Ball stages.
Yes, sir.
Dude, so how awesome is that? You started on the Ernie Ball, which is like a concert, the contest stages, right? You have to win to kind of like get on there.
Right.
But now you guys in 2017. I'm sorry. What was that? You're breaking up a little bit.
I was just going along with you. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I was just going along with you. I'm just agreeing.
Yeah, no problem. So now in 2017, you guys played the Maryland date, but now this time it was on Journeys. How did that come about?
Right. Honestly, I think it was just the contest itself changed. You know, at first it was all about getting your fan base to go onto your page and vote for it and this and that and like stream your music through their outlet. And, you know, so it was all about creating more of a buzz that way. So we got to play the little like truck stage, which was pretty okay. Mm-hmm. And I did enjoy those opportunities because they were actually pretty big learning experiences for us. Because I don't necessarily think. No, I don't want to say it like in a bad way, but I'm not sure if we were ready for the Warped Tour stage back then the way we were mm-hmm. when we were ready for it this time, which made the opportunity that came up this time that much better because now the contest shifted up. So the contest did put you on the main stage and it wasn't like you competed against five other bands from your area. You were the only band that won the online competition in that area. So if you got it, that was your spot and you played it. And, you know, thanks to the universe, we were in a pretty good position for that because on the Right Foot stage right next to us, you know, Andy Black was going on, who's a pretty big, you know, name in the sort of like darker, kind of spookier, emo kind of side of rock and roll music. And then on the stage following him after us was Attila. So mm-hmm. being sort of an emo metal band kind mm-hmm. of like, or at least in that genre, it was really perfect to be like between those two bands, you know what I mean? So. Yeah. I got to give them props for that, but it was a much different experience because the Ernie Ball stage was really small and, you know, they didn't really give you, you know, much of, you know, they gave you like a decent sound check and, you know, but if you didn't bring people to that stage, like nobody would really, you know, it wasn't one of the stages that people automatically go to. So mm-hmm. in this year when we went and did it, it was like, man, the kids like stampeded up to the stage and because we were the band making noise, they all just like locked in and we ended up playing yeah. for like 500 to 700 people, you know, it was like, oh man, like that was. You know, that was like night and day difference.
Yeah, you guys.
So it was really cool that it went down that way.
Yeah, you guys got to play in a legit stage. You got to open. You opened it up, right? Before.
Yeah, we were the first band that went on the Journey's Left Foot stage.
Yeah, so you know the people are lining up there, and maybe mm-hmm. the band that they want to see doesn't come on until after you. So you got all their fans in front of you, and like you said, you didn't have to bring anybody, right? You didn't have to sell any tickets.
No, I mean, we brought people because that was one exactly. of our hotel markets and stuff. So that all worked out. So our people were right there up front. But the cool thing was is how many people who were at the Warped Tour still came in and checked us out. You
exactly.
know?
You know, you didn't have to bring the crowd. I mean, you did. Exactly. Obviously, you wanted people to see you at Warped Tour. But you didn't have to bring. The crowd came to you, which is definitely awesome. Did you guys, like, sell a lot of merch that day, meet a lot of people that weren't fans?
Oh, yeah. We did great at merch. And, even leading up to that day, we were working the opening lines and handing out postcards and stickers and stuff because we have a tour coming up starting this week that's hitting a lot of those areas. So we actually were like, we were doing a big promotional campaign the whole time. And then we ended up staying along with the tour for a few weeks afterwards, just continuing to promote and you know, do promotional material and stuff. So I was able, like, to when I found out where the stage was, I found the opening line that was right next to the stage, and I handed out postcards to everybody, and I was playing the music on a Bluetooth speaker, and I was just like, hey, if you guys want to make us look really good, like, come and, like, run up to the stage and come rock out with us, because we're the first band that's going on, and we're, you know, we're local, we're from here, you know, like, we're from this area, and everyone was, like, super supportive, so I wasn't expecting them to take it so literally and literally run to the stage. But it looked good on us because the sound guy was like, oh, we'll give you guys a couple minutes for some people to show up. And once the kids started stampeding down the lane, he was just like, oh, man, all right, cool, make some noise, guys. And mm-hmm. we just got the chance to get into it. So mm-hmm. it was really fun. Mm-hmm. It was a great time. It's one of my favorite shows I think we've ever played.
Dude, that sounds crazy, man. And it's awesome to see that you guys are talking about handing out download cards and stuff like that. I mean, I think that's another issue with technology is I think it has made so many young kids like complacent. And, you know, you don't hear that. It's like, oh, you have nothing to do. Go into New York City or whatever city you have a show that's and there's a band that's similar to you. Go there and hand out your music, hand out your stickers, trying to promote it. I mean, dude, that's the reason.
You'd be surprised how much hitting the pavement really does. Like, it makes a difference when you just like hit the pavement and you just go old school promoting with it, you know, like. that's the way to do it. And you got to love things like Warped Tour and stuff that are keeping the rock and roll scene alive, because like all the kids that do exist on the internet, you know, they'll go out for Warped Tour. So that's where your fans are, because a lot of the times, even as a touring band, your fans aren't always going to be in the clubs you're playing. The kind of people that will love what you do, you know, like are on the internet somewhere. So, you know, when you get those big festivals and you get those big opportunities, like all those kids that are usually just, you know, in their screen somewhere are actually there. And then you get a chance to be a band that they actually got to meet on the opening line. And I think that that makes a bigger difference in like how much of they become a fan of the band, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, and people are there all day, and it's not just a show and then like the band's done. There's meet and greets, there's food, you know, there's all those different record labels there. So it's like just an awesome place to even meet the band members that you, of the bands that you listen to.
You're right.
Yeah. And I mean, and just like we were talking about in The Pavement, and one of the reasons why I asked you guys why you guys were signed, because you just look up your band and it's like you've been featured on some pretty popular websites. Like for Alternative Press, you got, and I forget what year, but you guys were one of Alternative Press's 7 underground bands that they were suggesting that you needed to hear. So to be featured on Alternative Press,
we were really lucky for that.
Mm-hmm. So how did you how did that come about? Did you guys just one day like catch a link and a tag and you're like, holy shit, we just got featured in Alternative Press?
We've reached out quite a few times, and you know, in the earlier time part of our career, we had made friends with a couple of writers, and those writers that were fans of the band and that were really good friends of ours ended up becoming contributing writers for Alternative Press. So when we put out the new record, they were really stoked on it. So as contributing writers, they had a little bit more pool, so they kind of like they put it out there, and it kind of worked out for us in that, in that aspect.
Yeah.
And, you know, but we also, you know, we were taking the release of this record very seriously. So we did also hire on a PR agency to work with us and try to get some more, you know, stuff out there and try to tap into some more internet markets. And I think that was a really good investment on our part, because, you know, thankfully we were able to make enough money to actually afford the investment. And, you know, that's always a great way, because, you know, there are those people who are on the internet who are looking for something new. And if you can get featured on all the different kinds of sites, I mean, Alternative Press obviously being a big one, but you know, by getting out there and just like being able to have someone to like, you know, just get people to write some stuff about you and to tell your story, really was what it comes down to. Because Away You Last has a hell of a story to tell, you know. Like, we've been, you know, we're an unsigned independent band who has been through like all of the, like, you know, crazy parts of the rock and roll lifestyle, but we've done it all without the help of a label or without the help of any sort of financial backing. You know, it's been purely a grind and purely a, you know, I wouldn't say 100% a struggle, but, you know, it's like the law of reaping and sowing. There's ups and downs. Mm-hmm. So, eventually when you can make it a little bit of a name, I think it's a little bit easier to get people to like hear it. And then if you can tell that story, I think that, you know, a lot of people, when they are listening to a band or when they're thinking about a band they want to get behind, you know, I think telling a good story is like, you know, key, because they want to make sure that, you know, that, you know, and we as a band are we're a very genuine group, you know, like we want to make sure that, you know, they know that we're like, you know, we're doing this the way we could perceive as the right way, but there's no real right or wrong way to do it. But, you know, so I think that, like, you know, with the internet especially, like, people want to kind of feel like they know the band a little bit, and having PR agencies and having articles and stuff written up, or even doing stuff like this, like what I'm doing with you right now, it really helps to make people feel like they're connected to you, because anybody could go to iTunes or YouTube and watch your videos, but, like, you know, understanding where the band members individually are coming from and like what kind of story they have to tell, you know, I think that brings people closer and makes people more connected. And that's what we like really want to promote as a band, is like being together and like the human consciousness and human interactions, because we do live in a world of screens, you know what I mean? Like, nothing makes me more mad than seeing a whole crowd with their phones up watching a band play because they're recording it. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, this is the time where you like drop all that and you just let loose. You know what I mean? Like, so
it's so funny too, because like a couple years ago, I had like the Zoom cameras with the microphones on them. So I would like record the bands, the bands I would see, I'd record them live. But, like, there's always, like, a few songs that at a band set, I'm like, even though I love this song so much and I want the footage, I would just stop the camera and just take it in, because I'm like, dude, it's so much better when you're absorbing it through your eyes and your ears and, like, recording it just to watch it on your screen later on, you know?
Right.
But dude, it's your band's got some pretty impressive shit going on, man. You had your music video for Never Be a Memory was featured on Bloody Disgusting. You guys charted on the Billboard charts, I believe number 59 for current hard rock music and 88 for the on the number 88 on the new music chart, and you're not even a signed band. That's insane.
Dude, thank you. Yeah. That really means a lot. Those were definitely, you know, those were accomplishments that, you know, we really those meant a lot to us. Mm-hmm. You know, even though the numbers aren't necessarily that high, but even just being in the top 100 is an honor, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, at least we know that, like, we're doing something right there, you know what I mean? And exactly. And that's one of the cool things about what we're doing now is after we've learned a little bit more of the business side of everything, like, you know, learning how to market better and how to, like, push sales the way we have and stuff like that, you know, because, like, right now, like, you know, I don't think it's that unrealistic for bands to be bands without, you know, labels. The help of a label. I think that we live in an era where you can create an equal exchange of energy between band and fan that can exist through straight one-on-one interactions because the internet brings everybody, like, right there. All you have to do is know how to, like, bring them all into a group and be there with them, because a lot of these people who love what we do will support what we do, and you know, and in return for that, we, you know, we give them, you know, free tickets to shows, or, you know, if they donate this, they get first access to things and stuff like that. And, you know, when you can do that without having to go through all the red tape that, you know, sometimes labels and different companies put in front of you, like, you know, I think it's very possible in this day and age to be a DIY band, and that's kind of what we've really become at this point. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that if we didn't get a good offer from a label that we wouldn't, you know, highly consider it, because, you know, obviously every band wants to try to move forward, and we want to get this message out there however we can. So if we can get any sort of boost through that, we're obviously going to go for it. But at the same time, we're really, like, you know, it's been really awesome to really just have a straight one-on-one interaction with the people who are, like, supporting what we do. Like, it's very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, dude, if you think about it, like, we were talking about the YouTube stars and some of the small, like, people that made it big on YouTube. Dude, that's having – YouTube is like having your own TV show. So, mm-hmm. If you could have your technical own TV show on YouTube, why can't you have your own band without a record label and not having millions of dollars, obviously?
Absolutely. I definitely think it's possible this day and age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I mean, dude, it's crazy. If you guys aren't signed within the next year or two, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Dan. You're the man.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say, like, too, again, you're one of those bands, like all the other local bands that we listen to, not to bring you guys down or anything, but, like, I listened to your, like, that music video, Never Be a Memory, was it? And, dude, I'm like, dude, this song is freaking amazing. I'm like, dude, it's just as good as, if not better than, a lot of those local bands that I hear with music videos. I'm like, but there's a reason that they're more popular than a lot of these bands because of the grind. So,
right.
I mean, like I said, just, I feel like if you guys kept it up, there's no reason why you shouldn't be signed, or you should be able to do it DIY without the backing of a label.
We shall see what the path unfolds for us.
Hell yeah. Man. And also, I just wanted to throw this
we're
in here.
We're pretty much open to anything at this point.
Hell yeah, man. I just wanted to throw this in here real quick before we ended it. Just talk about your new album. It's called Life, Death, and Rebirth. It's out now on iTunes and, you know, all the places you can get it. Just talk about, you know, some things, maybe plug some songs, talk about how it's different maybe than the last stuff that you've written, just before we end the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right. So Life, Death, Rebirth is a concept record that I wrote during hard times. I don't like to be super personal or super mushy about it, but there was a time where I was on a lot of psychiatric medications that started when I was younger and went through, you know, depression, anxiety, all those things that I know that so many of our fans struggle with and so many of our friends and family have struggled with. And I got to one of those points where I was at an all-time low, and I tried to find strength in something, you know, other than, you know, those kinds of medicines and those kinds of vibes. So I started reading spiritual texts. So I came across this book called The Tibetan Book of the Dead. Mm-hmm. And the Tibetan Book of the Dead talks about, you know, their perception of the afterlife and how you get to this point where you're faced with these, like, these Buddhas of sorts, and they sort of represent the different parts of the human consciousness, and they test your soul to see how much you've learned in the life you live, because I was in a low point, so I was thinking a lot about mortality and what it was like, what would happen, what all the mistakes I've made, everything that I've done in life, like what I would have to show if I ever went into, you know, if I was ever just to cease to exist, like what comes next, et cetera, et cetera. So the Life, Death, Rebirth kind of came to me during that dark time. And, you know, with Purgatorium, it's kind of sort of an introduction to this sort of world. And I use the title Purgatorium because it's a mixture of purgatory and auditorium, because it's sort of like, you know, there's a dual perspective there of this like new soul entering the afterlife and kind of being taunted and kind of being like, you know, antagonized by the parts of the human consciousness that are darker, you know, envy, you know, envy, pride, fear, the kind of things that I think slow down a lot of people in their journeys through their lives. And you know, and if you listen to the record and you progress through it, you'll notice that the first two songs, you know, Purgatorium and Analysis Paralysis, talk about those main things: fear, pride, anxiety, you know, the kinds of dark things that end up being obstacles in people's ways. And then, you know, but those play a very significant role in life, because, you know, a lot of people won't do something because of fear or anxiety. And, you know, the whole point of the character going through that is to know that by letting go of that fear and letting go of that anxiety, to realize that, you know, he is no longer quote unquote human. So those human emotions that are like, you know, holding you back are stopping you from whatever enlightenment you're trying to pursue or whatever fulfillment you're trying to pursue. And then as you mix through, you know, I feel like love is one of those elements that plays such a prominent role in people's lives. So you move into the song Dark Waltz, which is about this, you know, this love that the character experienced that was like beautiful and magical and all the greatest parts of love, the joy, the happiness, you know, everything that goes into that. But then, you know, it sort of takes a turn for the worse when you get towards the end, when he realizes that that love didn't work out, and the envy that comes from that, and the jealousy and the insecurity that comes when you like lose someone who's dear to you. And then when you move into White Rabbit, which is sort of also another tag on love, he kind of like, he moves into that phase of like, you know, the who people choose has nothing to do with you. So he's kind of, it's almost like one of those, it's like a, it's sort of like a rallying cry to anybody who's ever been hurt by, you know, love or by, you know, romantic connection, because, you know, it's sort of one of those like, you know, you were doomed from the start. You know, if you can't, you can't control who people choose or how you go through things. So he has to sort of learn that lesson and understand that even though that played such a prominent role in his life, you know, that, you know, it didn't work out for a reason. But those songs also get progressively lighter as the, like, you know, record progresses. And then when you move into, you know, the third part of the record, you've got Constellations, which is basically a rallying cry to the artist, where the character's starting to understand that, you know, everyone's connected through an energy, and that, like, you know, the biggest lesson you can learn of all, just like in Doctor Strange, is that it's not really about you. It's about how we're connected to everybody and how you impact the world, and how, like, you know, if people come together, the energy is so much stronger and so much more positive. So Constellations represents that connection of energies. And then if you, when you finally get to the song Reflections, you'll notice that throughout the song Reflections, there are a couple of, there's a couple of different taglines that kind of tag on some of the older songs in the record, because as the character is sort of reaching that point of enlightenment, he's like realizing, you know, the different lessons that he did learn by experiencing those things, not only in life, but in this sort of afterlife test that he's been put through. And when it all comes together, he realizes that, you know, that's what it all is. It's everyone just being together, and, you know, all the lessons that he learned shaped him into the type of energy that he is. And the question that's asked in the first song, Purgatorium, is will he choose heaven or hell, or will he be reborn, is answered in the last song when you realize that he doesn't go to heaven or hell. But once you listen to the song all the way through, and once he reflects through and everything kind of slows down, if the CD is on repeat, it'll immediately flow back into the first song to represent that after all he's learned, even if it was, you know, a lot or a little, that he was only meant to live again, to experience it all again. So the album itself sort of represents that cycle of this character's soul and this character's like kind of life. So when you listen to the record, it gets progressively lighter, and then it completely flows back to the beginning, because it's written in a way that's supposed to represent that it, you know, there's a continuance that happens there, and the lessons that you learn in life do shape you, but, you know, there's still so much more to learn. So you should always, you know, always be seeking to live a life that is fulfilling. And, you know, and I think that I hope that the record, you know, translates that well, and I hope that people pick up on that. But so that's essentially like the rundown of the record, you know, in a quick little spat. You know, I apologize for the rant.
No problem. It sounds like it's a nice roller coaster of emotions and lyrics. And I mean, dude, it sounds like an amazing story from front to back. It's like it's crazy how you're able to articulate the, you know, the story from one end to the album to the other. That's not something you really hear nowadays.
I appreciate that, man. And I try to write the song so that it can still be interpreted by any, mm-hmm. you know, anyone can interpret it any way, you know, so I don't ever want to go into details about like how it specifically pertains to my life, but it is sort of a story of what I've experienced thus far. And when I wrote it, I was in a dark place. So, you know, it is sort of a story of my life, but I tried to write it to be relatable so that mm-hmm. anybody can kind of like feel those things, because I think that fear, anxiety, love, envy, heartache, and you know, the understanding of like being fulfilled, or that, you know, people can be connected, I think everyone should experience those things, because I think that is what makes us human.
Shit, man. Dude, that's crazy. And also to end the episode, what we're gonna do is feature a song of yours from the album. So to give the fans a taste of this album and people that haven't heard of you, what song would you like to choose?
I think you should roll with Constellations, because I know with you doing the podcast and with me being in the band, bringing people together is the main thing that we're trying to do here. And I think that song is definitely one that talks about bringing people together, and kind of like, I think that really brings the like the whole point of the record sort of to a whole. It's one of my favorite songs. However, as far as prospecting new fans is concerned, I really think Purgatorium's great too. Mm-hmm. So I would let you choose between those two if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Constellations would be a bit different. Purgatorium is the main thing we've been kind of promoting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so Purgatorium would be kind of introducing it to the people, which may make them want to listen to more. But while we're trying to connect to people, I'd say maybe throw Constellations in there, man. It might be kind of cool.
All right, dude. Let's end it with Constellations. And Vincent, yeah, it was great talking to you, man, and good luck, and I hope to see you guys signed in about a year or two.
I appreciate it so much, dude. I hope to see you at one of these upcoming shows. I know we're going to be in Philly soon, so if you can make it out, come see us.
Hell yeah, man, we'll do. All right, brother. Good luck, man. Have a good night.
All right, take care of yourself.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Darkness seems to love me. I know we live in a world. time for many others.